Mr. Tom Rogn, the floor is yours now. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon and welcome to the conference call for the second quarter results of Norske Skog. My name is Tom Rogn. I'm the head of investor relations at Norske Skog. I'm joined by the CEO, Svein Oldsted, the CFO, Audun Rønneid, and Senior Vice President Commercial, Jan Klassen. Firstly, the CEO will give a short introduction before we open up for questioning.
Thank you, Tom. The second quarter results released this morning have gross operating earnings of similar level to the first quarter, just under 400 million. However, a marked improvement from last year's second quarter. The cash flow from operations covers all the financial items, which most of you are familiar with. It's quite heavy for us in the second quarter, so we generate before financial items 423 million, which compares to result, which was roughly 130 million lower from last year's second quarter. So probably the main positive thing from our side this quarter is the cash generation from the operations, helped also by further working capital improvements. As a consequence, the net interest-bearing debt has been reduced also in the quarter, a slight negative currency effect on the net debt, leaving us with now a figure of about 6.9 billion and roughly 4.12 months trailing EBITDA, so also well inside the covenant levels on the RCF, and although higher than what we would ideally like to see, getting into a territory which is more in line with what we're comfortable with than what we have seen over the last couple of years. On the margin side, the pricing and variable cost relatively stable first into second quarter and even into the third and fourth quarter this year, so not too much excitement there, and given our closure at Follum in Norway, operating rates are now also recovering into around 90% for all the segments. All in all, despite the difficult Eurozone environment, which also feeds into our products, we have probably an okay quarter, but we still need to focus improvement in margins, and we still work obviously to reduce fixed cost and net interest-bearing debt further. So on that short note, I will leave the floor open for questions, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star two. Again, please press star one to ask a question. Our first question comes from Lars Kjellberg of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. A couple of questions. Looking at your margin guidance, we heard from one of your competitors last week, I suppose, that they were seeing some pricing pressure on publication paper grades. If you want to comment that, and if so, your margin guidance, is that based on your own expectations of cost takeout? Also, if you could walk us through how you've transferred Follum volumes to your other mills. And the final point, if you can elaborate a bit on the Parenco deal today, what has been said, what are they going to make? And when you say you're going to release about 30 million euros, what does that actually mean?
Okay. Lars, I guess we start with the price comments and the guiding. We see relatively stable pricing environment for most of our products, and we see in other segments that are not ours that there is even some price improvements. We have not seen any dramatic price pressure. There has been selected price pressure. One example is in Asia, where the dollar pricing is a bit down, affecting some of the Tasman exports. So we see a relatively stable environment. I, of course, also note the guidance given by some of our competitors, but I guess some people are born with a half-full glass, and some people are born with an empty glass. So I think that's the main difference in the guidance.
Okay.
When it comes to the Follum volumes, a two main segments that Follum operated in. One is the MFC, the coated magazine market, the other being improved newsprint. And as you can see from the improved operating rates in the in both the magazine and the newsprint segment, that this transfer has gone quite well. So we are able, thus far at least, to keep the volumes at our inside our own mills. So we have higher operating rates and sell roughly the same volumes. Of course, it's a little bit early days to be too confident about the final outcome, as we have still had some stock, obviously, from Follum that has been sold, although that has been quite limited, particularly towards the end of the quarter. But it still remains a task that we're working on, but I'm quite optimistic that we will keep most of the business, which is interesting. The only business we are sure to lose is the book paper business, which was probably, what should we say, 40,000-50,000, yeah, in that range. So that is probably lost, but the rest we should be able to keep. The Tarenko transaction, we have announced that today and sold into H2 Private Equity, into a Dutch private equity company. They are active in packaging grades today, and they have an apparent interest into a conversion of this site. We've been working with several alternatives for many years, including a closure of the site, and we found that this was the most optimal solution. Obviously, the price that we eventually achieved for this reflects the fact that the competitiveness of Tarenko as a newsprint and an SEB producer is relatively low, with recovered paper based only and Dutch gas-fired power plant. It means that that this is a relatively exposed unit in its present circumstance. So when it comes to the cash release, that includes both the cash consideration from the buyer and also some other cash that we can take out as a consequence of the transaction.
But there's nothing conditional in there that they will stop production of the grades that would directionally compete with yourself?
There is no legal condition. There is only an economic incentive.
But you don't know any of the timing on their behalf?
We don't know any timing, but the intention is that they will spend about 6 months in the takeover process, which is also the period where we have agreed to sell the product from Tarenko, and after that they will then start looking into what type of conversions and how that is practical in a more detailed study. So far they have an overall study, and then they have to verify all the details, but I assume it's realistic to say it takes probably about half a year for them to get to a stage where they can actually go into more details.
Well done getting money for it, so good on you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Linus Larsson of SEB in Skilda. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you and good afternoon. Firstly, a follow-up on the Tarenko mill. If you could give us some indication as to the EBIT at the Tarenko mill in the second quarter, or EBITDA for that matter.
I think, Linus, we have to stick to the EBITDA, otherwise this becomes a tricky discussion. Of course, this is a relatively modest contribution to our GOE, and we will use the same guidance as we did with Follum, that these mills produce a very, very limited EBITDA to our business. I think it has been positive in the second quarter, but it has barely been positive.
That's excellent. How was it operating in the second quarter? Was it going at around the 90% level, or have you been taking a lot of market-related downtime at that mill?
We have not taken a lot of downtime at Tarenko, no.
Okay. Great. And then also maybe if you can help clarify something to me. I think early in the summer, management was at least quoted as saying that you were going to take quite significant amounts of market-related downtime in your European newsprint and magazine paper operation, and the figure which was mentioned in that news report was 10%. There was no exact timeline, but the figure 10% was mentioned. And if you could please clarify that, and especially in connection with today's statement that you expect healthy operating rates going forward.
Yeah, I think there are two factors to that statement. One is the fact that we do have market downtime also in let's say the rest of the year, so the 10% has to be seen in light of downtime which has been taken already in this year. Not that this 10% is including earlier timeline, but we have had both in the first and the second quarter has been market downtime that continues on selected basis into the third quarter. And the rest of that is the Parenco discussion, and so the guiding would have been a bit different today when we have sold Parenco.
Okay.
So we will still match supply demand, but the figure for the third quarter is probably going to be somewhat less than the 10% after the Parenco decision.
Great. And I don't know if you want to guide on that at all, but if you would look at your reported production figure for the second quarter, on a group level, for instance, do you expect a higher, roughly the same, or a lower figure for the third quarter?
Roughly the same, in sort of 89-90% range for all of them, maybe slightly higher outside of Europe.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And speaking of outside of Europe, do you expect a price change in Australia as of the 1st of July, and if so, how much?
We do not expect a price change now. We have negotiated that, so we were under some pressure to not impose it, and we have, in concession, we have gotten slightly higher relative volumes from some of the customers, and we have gotten slight improvements on some grade changes, but you should not expect a price increase from the 1st of July.
And I mean that the results in that division were relatively speaking quite satisfactorily. Is the Q2 level of profitability representative for the next couple of quarters?
I think what you've seen, of course, in Australia is a very dramatic shortfall on the volume side, driven by partly the weak retailing in Australia, and the particularly one of the main customers' reduction on some printed volumes. I think this is now evening out a bit, and also seasonally the first quarter is weaker than the other three quarters in the year, so I think we should see volume-wise reasonably similar development in the third and the fourth quarter as in the second quarter, and since pricing and margins are more or less on the same level, you shouldn't expect big differences. Of course, this is always said with the currency covenant caveat, and that is the main uncertainty, but from a margin and volume point of view, it's a relatively stable business.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
We will now take a question from Ken Pohl, Independent Global Research. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you. First question is, going back to Parenco, I was wondering if it would be possible to ask you to break out the $30 million. How much of that is working capital that you're getting out of that versus consideration for the transaction? Secondly, I was wondering if you could give any guidance as to where the drawdown on the credit facility is. And lastly, I was wondering if you could give some maintenance, CapEx maintenance guidance.
Yep. I will let Adin Rønneid answer the second on the RCF. Parenco, we cannot give you a very precise breakdown of the consideration other than that the consideration is less than the $30 million, which you already understood. The maintenance capex is today roughly $200 million plus minus per annum in the present configuration of the business.
Yeah, on the RCF, you know, the RCF, we are utilizing that according to the ID with the RCF. We are drawing it in some periods, and then we are repaying it in zero, drawing it in other periods. You will see from the both the statement of the short-term debt, the development there, when we are drawing and how roughly how much we are drawing. We are not giving exactly what we are drawing, because the RCF is... as you know, the idea is with the RCF, we can draw it and we draw it on sometimes, and then we repay it. Mm-hmm. But you can see roughly the figures from the report.
If I can ask one last follow-up question on the working capital, I see you know, there's quite a big change from first quarter to second quarter, but I also see that in your cash flow that you're reporting about a 55 impact. I was wondering if maybe you could give a little guidance as to how much, what was the impact on working capital of some of your divestments in the last quarter?
The biggest bulk of the release in the cash flow statement is related to divestment. So second quarter is traditionally not a big big stock build down period. And but there is still an efficiency. Roughly one third is probably related to operational efficiency. Two third is related to the following closure and the BOBO.
Okay, great. Thank you.
We will now take a question from Priya Viswanathan of Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. Thank you for taking the question. Can you just talk a little bit about more about the trends in Australia and, you know, the QOQ improvement that we saw in newsprint outside Europe? What really drove that? Was it better volumes in Australia only, or is it coming from something else? And generally speaking, is there an update that you have to give us on your Australian capacity, what sort of utilizations, and should we expect any shutdowns? I have a couple of follow-ups, if I may, once we tackle this. Thank you.
On the Australia or the result newsprint outside of Europe, there's always a slight currency impact on that, and we also had in the quarter a negative by the fact that we divested BOBO with effect from the 3rd of May, so they were only in one in that. But on Australia, there's a somewhat higher volume physically in the second quarter than in the first quarter also, so there is a positive volume development. So all of those three, currency effect, BOBO divestment, and Australian volumes are influencing that improvement. The second question, capacity adjustments in Australia, obviously with the steep decline in demand we've seen over the last quarters, we have to adapt capacity, as we have now more than one machine permanently exporting to Asia from the region. So that will be done. We have not concluded neither the internal studies nor the consultation periods required with the employees. So that will come relatively shortly, but we have not concluded it yet. But it's absolutely clear that we have to do adjustments to the capacity in the area.
Okay. Thanks for that. Just on Perenco, can I quickly clarify that, you know, when you're saying 30 million, the 30 million is after the working capital release and the closure cost that you will incur. So this is, it is net of all of that.
Correct. It's including working capital release, and we will not have any closure costs. So it's our net cash release at completion. We have no further obligations once that is done.
Okay, perfect. Just a third last question on the bond buyback. So, can I confirm that you're cancelling all the bonds that you buy back, or is there anything on the balance sheet on the liability side?
No, it's nothing on the balance sheet. But you know, that's independent if we cancel the bonds or not. But it's not on the balance sheet.
Okay, so it's not necessary that you're cancelling all the bonds that you buy back.
Oh, and that's right.
Have you bought back any in July?
No, if we, you know, we are commenting any bond buyback at the end of the quarter, so we are not commenting anything for the third quarter. But what I can say is that we are, you know, it could be a macroeconomic situation where we see we can buy back bonds at a good yield, and then we are evaluating and buying back bonds. So that's more and more on day-to-day evaluation.
But we certainly aim to do that also now going forward.
Yep.
Okay. Sorry, one last follow-up there. Is there a restriction in your RCF on how much of bonds that you can buy back in a particular year or in relation to your liquidity or anything like that?
We have some regulations in the RCF, that's correct. I wouldn't go into the detail there, but it's some regulations, yes.
It is some regulations, but the main evaluation we do is basically our own liquidity versus buybacks, and what we buy back is driven by yields and the liquidity of the particular issue.
Okay, let me tackle it a little differently. If you're in compliance with the covenant on the RCF, would you still be able to buy back bonds?
We would still be able, given that we feel that we have sufficient liquidity. So it depends on the liquidity in the company, but it's an ongoing evaluation that we always have done. But we have also said that we need a certain level of cash to run the business on a daily basis, between 500 and 700 million NOK, and that is still the case. We still have to have that for supplier credits and other things. So that is the main driver of the bond buybacks.
Okay. Do you think the 3X at the end of 2013 is, you know, you have a plan to get to the 3X leverage covenant at the end of 2013, or is that something you will need to renegotiate?
I would hope we could get to that level de facto before that. So I think we are not particularly worried about the covenant level and the tightening of the covenant.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you for your questions. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. Our next question comes from Nitin Dias of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I had a few housekeeping questions. First one, can you remind us how much was the currency negative impact on your net debt for the quarter?
Yes, 66 million.
Understood. And the second is, my calculation suggests that the net debt benefit from your debt buybacks was about 100 million. Can you just correct me if I'm wrong as to what that number was, if it's very different?
Far away.
A little bit less, but not far away.
Okay. The third is, from Perenco, are any benefits included in your, either in your P&L or your cash flow from a potential divestment of Perenco, or should we assume that all the benefits, i.e. the 30 million cash benefit and any cost savings should flow after the business gets out of your scope of consolidation?
The latter. We have, of course, this is signed yesterday, so it's signed after the quarters. We have seen nothing yet. It was ongoing normal business in the second quarter. It will then close at the earliest at the end of the third quarter. So you will also see sort of a normalized reporting for the third quarter, but we will disclose later on the detailed accounting effects. But you would see the benefits then most likely in the fourth quarter.
Understood. And just follow up on Perenco. So you had earlier guided that you should be able to reduce your fixed cost by about 500 million. I'm assuming that excluded Perenco, right? So if Perenco goes out of the scope of consolidation, you should have some more. Can you give us a sense of what that number could be? I don't know.
Perenco fixed cost is roughly 200 million now.
Okay. And how much of your cost, the 500 million cost savings program, are reflected in the Q2 numbers?
I guess that we said that by the end of the year, we should then be before Perenco effects, that's about 3.5 billion per annum, and which is somewhat below 900 per quarter. We are now somewhat above 900, so we we're clearly on the way, but we are not fully there. And this is, of course, due to the fact that there were still costs being carried by BioBio and Follum in the second quarter, and there's still some other cost reducing activities which happened. So I guess we can say that we're 100% on track to be at the running rate of 3.5 billion, given the present currency mix at year end, and then gradually, of course, the 200 million will come out because of Parenco in addition.
Understood. A couple of non-housekeeping questions. The first one is, Moody's have mentioned in one of your releases that I guess if you buy back debt at a significant discount to par, that could be treated as an event of default. Does that in any way hinder your thought process on debt buybacks? And is there any link between a potential Moody's rating action and any documentation on your RCF?
No, yeah, I understand your question. The bond buyback we are doing is quite limited, and regarding Moody's, I don't think this is an issue. We will buy back bonds when we see the yield is good, and we're also open with Moody's for what we are doing. So I don't think that's an issue.
That's very helpful. But is there any link between Moody's rating action and any documentation in your RCF?
No, it's not.
Okay. And the last question was, obviously one of the drivers for you to reduce debt is debt buybacks. And obviously it's a bit of game theory that if people get more comfortable with your credit quality, the cash price of your bond goes up and therefore may become a little more, become less attractive for you to buy back bonds. So, I guess other than asset disposals and debt buybacks, I mean, is there anything else that we need to think about when looking at your debt reduction strategy?
I think those are the main parts, and I agree with you that there is a bit of a dilemma that you may see that the bond spreads go in and we have less opportunity, but of course so far we have seen ample opportunity. Although some of the market quoted rates are difficult to get at any say large chunks of liquidity, so I think we will target certain yields when we do buybacks, and I think we can still use that for quite some time. Of course, the best way to run the deleveraging fast is to improve the margins, which is the other element that we are doing, and I think there is also a certain possibility to optimize still further capital efficiency and working capital improvements. For instance, with an Australian machine shutdown, you will also see more working capital release. But I think otherwise, from a more sort of capital structure point of view, I don't think you could expect a lot of things. We don't really have a joker up our sleeve on that.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Our next question comes from Jayan Kandalan of Blue Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just had a couple of questions on operations. I just wanted to understand, in terms of your working capital outlook for the next two quarters, I mean, you kind of mentioned that about a third of the working capital release was coming from the operational side, and the rest basically from the asset disposal. So I was just trying to understand how should we view working capital development going forward in 3Q and 4Q, please?
Yeah, what is traditional and what will probably happen this year also is that you will see relatively little changes from the operational side on working capital in the third quarter, and then some release in the fourth quarter, and I think that's a fair assumption this year also, and this is mainly the seasonal effects of the sales and production patterns. There's of course always improvements to be had, but they are not significant probably, and barring any big price movements on raw materials or product prices, I think this is a fair statement that you will see some working capital release at the end of the year.
Okay, that's
I think if you can look a little bit at the history here and see what has been done also in the past, you will see that to get a sense of the magnitudes.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking in relation to the fact that you have done quite a bit of management on the working capital side over the last few quarters. So I'm not sure if it would be very easy to compare and match from the previous years. So I was just trying to understand that aspect. Yeah, secondly, I just wanted to understand your variable cost outlook. I mean, you kind of, the chart kind of shows that you are looking at variable costs mostly flattish or as overall lower in 2012 compared to 2011. But I was wondering, do you see any kind of upward pressure on, say, OCC or fiber as such, pulp as such, in current trading, and what do you expect for the rest of the year, please?
Now, the main virgin fiber contracts we have, we see a slight decrease in the Norwegian wood prices from 1st of July, which is already there. I would be surprised, given the reduction of duties from Soviet for the former Soviet Union and from Russia into to Scandinavia and to Finland, I would be surprised if we do not see further downward pressure on Nordic wood prices, but for us the next effect of that would only be 1st of January. Pulp prices is softish, but not dramatic for the time being, so you'll probably also see some minimum or small movements there, and recovered paper, for the time being, we don't see huge movements. We still believe that recovered paper will increase a little bit again, but maybe this is now not so much for this autumn, maybe more for next spring, but that will come. Our dependence on recovered paper is now, of course, much less than it used to be after Parenko. So if in Europe we have been buying about 1.2 to 1.5 million tons, and Parenko has been more than a third of the European procurement here. So about 300,000 tons have been bought into Parenko. So the relative importance is less, but of course we're still a major buyer of recovered paper, so we still follow that closely.
Great. And if I could just touch on the Parenko news which you sent to us this morning. Am I right to assume that since you said there's going to be a benefit to the net debt number after the completion of the deal? So technically, it means that the net debt would be positively impacted by €30 million. Is it what you're finally getting at, net of everything?
So the cash release is about €30 million. So everything else constant, you should expect us to offset that against the debt, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, if I get it right, that means that the net debt amount will be lower by €30 million. Is it how I'm to read it?
From that transaction alone, you could say that is probably more or less correct, but we still have 3 months of operations to go before closing, but from a theoretical point of view, if nothing else changes, yes, that's the case.
Great. And one last question, if I may. Just looking at your maturity profile, you kind of mentioned regarding the RCF drawal procedure. So am I right in assuming that the amount of maturity which is kind of being shown for the next 1 year is more or less on the RCF? Or is it anything else, any other short-term instruments, or is it something else?
Yeah, it's also including some, amongst other, we have an export credit facility in one of our business units. So it's not only the RCF, it's some others included as well.
Any idea on how to, what proportion of it is either RCF and export facilities?
What I said to answer to an earlier question is that we are not guiding directly on how much we are drawing, but because we are drawing and then we are repaying. So like the idea is within RCF, but you can read from the accounts from the Q2 roughly that.
Okay. Thank you so much. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will now take a follow-up question from Ken Paul. Please go ahead.
Yes. So, sorry, one quick follow-up. I was wondering if you could give some guidance. You said that not all the cash came in from the Fulham transaction, but the remainder should come in the third quarter. Can you guide us to roughly what we should expect to see on that?
Yeah, there is some accounts receivable which we have not received yet, and I would imagine you can talk between 50 and 100 million NOK.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
We will take a follow-up question now from Nitin Dias. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I had a follow-up on the RCF. I wasn't sure if I understood it right, but are you saying that the RCF, the amount that you've drawn down under your RCF, is that shown under the 2014 maturities of your page 16 of your report, or is that shown under the maturities of 2012, under the 2012 maturities?
It's shown under the 2012 maturity.
Okay, understood. Any reason why you're showing that under a 2012 maturity rather than a 2014 maturity? Because the RCF, I suppose, matures in 2014, right? If you can just help me understand.
Yeah, that's correct. But, you know, the RCF, from time to time, we have not drawn anything at all. And then in periods we have drawn on it. So that's why we are showing this as a short term. Because since we are not drawing the whole facility for the whole period, you know, it wouldn't make sense to show this as a 2014 maturity.
Okay, understood. That's helpful. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have no further questions at this point of time.
Okay, then we thank you all for your participation and your questions, and have a good afternoon.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.